Good day, and welcome to today's Telehealth In-Home Care Planning for the Long Term conference call. This call is being recorded. And at this time, I would like to turn the call over to Ms. Christine Siegel. Please go ahead, Ms. Siegel.
Good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome you to the presentation, Telehealth In-Home Care Planning for the Long Term. My name is Christine Siegel, and I'm the Performance Improvement Coordinator from IPRO, the New York QIO. IPRO and the Northeast Healthcare Quality Foundation and MassPRO have partnered together to provide this presentation to home care agencies in New York, Maine, New Hampshire, Vermont, and Massachusetts. You all should have received a copy via email of the presentation slides and the handouts. And this presentation is being taped and will be posted to the IPRO website or available on CD by request. Now it is my pleasure to introduce Audrey Kinsella. Audrey has been a medical information researcher for 20 years, the first five at the Harvard Medical School in Boston, Massachusetts, and the last 15 at various institutions or independently doing work devoted to telemedicine research and applications. Her projects have included she has designed the bibliographic and other special databases for the National Library of Medicine-sponsored website, the TAI, or the Telemedicine Information Exchange. She's designed and wrote materials for multiple websites about new technologies for the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation's Last Acts End-of-Life Campaign. And she's provided courses to FDA officials on home telehealth and the use of telehealth care devices with elderly populations, as well as taught telemedicine courses to biomedical engineers and nurses. She has authored 6 books and more than 150 published articles on home telehealth and telehospice. And she was also the telehealth editor for Home Healthcare Nurse from 1998 to 2001. During 1998 to 2000, she was director of information services for 10 home health programs at the National Rehabilitation Hospital in Washington, D.C., and to continue with that work of helping the less able to live and age safely in place at home, she subsequently earned an executive certificate in home modification and planning for the aged and disabled from the Andrus Gerontology Center at the University of Southern California at Los Angeles. And it's now my pleasure to introduce Audrey Kinsella.
Thanks very much to you, Christine, and your team from the Quality Improvement Organizations in the Northeast. Hi, everyone. Thanks for joining me for a talk I've been looking forward to providing. We're going to be looking at telehealth and home care planning for the longer term. Let me just say a word or two about where we're going with this focus. We're not talking about long-term care this time. Right now, all of you are involved with the CMS demonstration projects that, in part, are concerned with trying out telehealth and home care. And the focus of today's talk is introducing you to planning for the longer term in home care at your offices. I mean planning to use home telehealth and using it very effectively for years after this demonstration project is completed. Now, I know that all of you are at very different levels of knowing about and using home telehealth. So let's start out with the basics for all of us. We're looking at slide 2. Home telehealth, what is it? We'll start with a definition, and that is it's healthcare services and education delivered by nurses who are off-site to their patients at home using telecommunications-ready devices. Now, I know that sounds like a mouthful, telecommunications devices, but what that means is that we're using telephones or a video camera or measurement tools like blood pressure cuffs to connect with our patients, or maybe we're using all three of these types of communication tools, the telephone, the video camera, a blood pressure cuff, or a weight scale. But I think it's important that we don't put too much emphasis on the idea of new tools and instead think more about the opportunity that all of us have for improved communications with our patients with tools that we already do know. I think it's also interesting to note that over the years, various programs that have reported patients being very upset about getting discharged from home telehealth after their admission period was over and having to give back their equipment and the telehealth tools. But they also noted that it was the contact with the nurses that they missed the most, not getting rid of the tools and, you know, getting attached to them. It's the contact with the nurses. So really, we can't overemphasize the importance of this opportunity we have now for improved and increased communications between nurses and your patients with the help of telehealth tools. That said, let's look at some of these tools. There's a sampling on slide 3. Some of these may or may not look familiar, but more and more you'll find that most telehealth tools are performing similar functions. On this slide, there's a workstation on the left for nurses to track patients, and that white tube-like object next to it is a camera. On the right are a variety of weight scales and blood pressure cuffs. And when I downplay the differences in appearance, that's because you will find that the package tools all aim to perform the same function, and that is replicating what nurses like you would typically do on an in-home skilled visit. You'd measure weight, blood pressure, and so on. And over the years, well, the 12 years that I've studied home telehealth, there's been a great push by vendors to make sure that all of the parameters that you'd usually capture in person can be captured and transmitted accurately through telehealth, which is great timing, I'm sure you'll agree, as we all have to begin facing problems like nursing shortages and so forth. And we really have to look for acceptable alternatives to strictly in-person conventional home nursing visits. On slide 4, I'm indicating what I think is you already know, I'm sure all of you already know, why home telehealth care, why use it now? Well, we all know we need to find additional and new means to provide needed care to our patients, and telehealth is one way to meet today's demands of PPS and improved outcomes that are expected from each of our admitted home care patients, and now to meet the CMS expectations for your project to reduce patients' rehospitalizations. We have to do even more when we're not there. That means we have to make sure that we have good tools and plans for tracking how our patients are doing, not only every day in between the days we don't see them in person, but throughout every day, throughout the days, and that we also have a good means to address problems that we identify, like the 2-pound weight gain in a CHF patient, can be addressed promptly through dietary counseling with you on the telephone, and you're making sure that a diuretic is prescribed immediately. Well, that's just one example of using telehealth. Let's move on beyond the basics of home telehealth now, though. I do want to say that this is really important to note, that even though some of us have been using telehealth for some time, we are all still at a frontier of healthcare delivery. It's still very new territory for all of us. I was just speaking to some of the organizers right before we started this call, and I didn't realize how true that is. Although I talk about the frontier all the time, people who seem to be at the forefront, have been using it for years, are still only using it with a handful of patients. So we don't really have any true examples to look up to. I know that I was given a wonderful introduction of all the things that I've done and so forth, but excuse me, I just had a problem with my computer. I'll be right back. I did want to tell you that I did have this experience managing 10 home telehealth programs in the late 1990s, and I did learn a lot about the tools at that time, really hands-on learning and implementation, especially with disabled patients. And even now, 5 to 6 years later, I still see the same tools. Learning how to use them appropriately and, you know, using them well is never as clear-cut as it seems or as it's presented when you are given a demo. So I just want you to know that you're not alone in that respect. I'm sorry, I seem to have some trouble with my computer losing its place. Pardon me for the delay. Christine had mentioned one of my experiences had been putting together a website for the National Library of Medicine. That was back in 1994. And one of the things I just wanted to tell you that's of interest to us now is, I don't know how many of you used the Internet that time. There weren't that many people that were, and email was almost non-existent. But I would actually have people calling the website as if it were a library reference desk to ask questions about telemedicine. And I think what's of really great interest is that most of the questions I got asked, about 40 a week, were about home telehealth. So even back then, there was a lot of interest. And to a person, the two most frequently asked questions were, what does it cost? Well, I'm not going to deal with that one today. I mean, that's a question that is really a difficult one to approach. And the second question was, does it work? Well, I am going to deal with that question today at some length, because I know that's all of interest to you, and you are, most of you are just getting started, or maybe getting started differently to meet the parameters of the CMS program. So let's move on to the idea of, does telehealth work? I think we can answer this very well. We really can't answer it well yet. Does it work? Because there's no standards in place, and most agencies are just trying telehealth to see if it works. There really isn't a how-to guide or an easy way to get our arms around this new frontier. There's nothing prepackaged, in other words. As you can see on slide 5, we all have to design an in-house how-to and should-do series of guides. I've interviewed hundreds of nurses and home care administrators over the years, and few people really are using such guides today. It's a lot of work. There's limited time. You have a lot of patients that you have to attend to. That's understandable. But a few years ago, my feeling was that if we didn't begin with in-house guides so that we could document what we do and be able to measure our success, well, then there's a chance of concluding that home telehealth does not work. Well, we don't know that for sure, but we haven't documented. So I researched and wrote this book that covers on slide 6, Home Telehealth Care Process, Policy, and Procedures, mainly to provide suggested guidelines to home telehealth use and to make it work. And so I've included the policies and forms for distribution to you, and there's 5 policies and 14 forms that you could use as you like to set up your own in-house policies and forms. I think the best response I would welcome from this conference is that people really have used the forms or tried to hammer out guidelines in-house for you to use with your patients. Let's take a closer look at what you've received. There's 5 suggested policies, as you can see listed on slide 7. And let's look at these as building blocks for your home telehealth programs. The first one, for instance, home telehealth use, should identify who is authorized to use telehealth, and that means by their credentials in your state and the type of service, such as nurse, social worker, and so forth, and the type of training they should have received to use telehealth with your patients. Next policy we have is staff training, which is important to sketch out in detail. That means the kinds of machines that will be used in the agency, the staff who will be doing the training, the documentation that each trainer should receive, and details on how often the training should be updated. The policies for appropriate assignment of patients to telehealth will identify certain capabilities and support that the patient has at home. And the policy for assessment of homes as appropriate for telehealth will also identify features that are must-haves for telehealth delivery. We'll be talking about both of these concerns, the appropriate patient and the home, in some detail in a few minutes. But lastly, though, I do want to make some note of the 5th suggested policy, and this one is on telehealth equipment use and maintenance, because I think these issues are often overlooked. We're not just looking at the one-day training session from the vendor, but we're looking at the longer term, or even 10 years down the road. And right now, the equipment is all so new that we may likely not even think about the issues of ensuring that it works tomorrow, and particularly when it's in a patient's home. So please take a look at that policy in your materials for this conference after we're finished today. Let's keep in mind the value of implementing these suggested policies. As I note on slide 8, we will have put in a lot of time and work up front into fashioning these policies, But the value is that they will act as a single in-house compass. They'll really help us to know what to do. And I think as a result, we and all of our staff will start out on a surer footing in telehealth. We won't all feel like we're just trying this to see if it will work today with this patient. And finally, again, as we're looking toward using telehealth in the long term, by having these how-to and should-do policies in place, we'll be much more able to move toward routinization of planning and delivery of telehealth, which is a much-needed next step. How do we get these routines in place for day-to-day delivery of telehealth by your staff? Well, we need precisely worded in-house how-to should-do forms. And you'll see from the information I sent that there are more than a dozen forms for troubleshooting equipment and performing patient and home assessments and so on. And many of you are thinking, more paperwork. That's just what we need. But it's true. There's a lot of time and effort required up front to get these in order. But keep in mind that you're actually streamlining the actual work in telehealth delivery. And with these forms, you won't be reinventing any more wheels every time an agency purchases a new piece of equipment or assigns patients to telehealth. And you could manage a great deal that's new in a straightforward and predictable way. So that's what I think the value is. And I hope as you get those hammered out, you'll agree that you are saving time in the long run. Let's talk a little bit more about some of these forms, though, particularly those that note tasks for home and patient assessments. We'll be moving on to slide 10, home assessment. Need to do. We're looking way beyond just checking for working electricity. All of those concerns that we need to do are indicated on slide 10. We're looking for at least one working telephone line, a telephone that can be unplugged from the wall jack, and so forth. And I know you already know how to do a home assessment, but what we need to look at is how things are different when we're using some of our skills to assess the home for home telehealth. For safety reasons in particular, we need to make a handwritten plan of locations and numbers of working outlets, of telephone jacks, and the condition of all of those, and as well indicate wires or changes that might be introduced into the patient's homes. We're going way beyond eyeballing a room. What we need to do is pack and bring with us for each home assessment a backup bag. You'll see the contents are noted on slide 12. These include a tape measure and an electrical extension cord and so on. And as you could see from slide 13, this is way beyond the room selected for a patient's telehealth delivery. We're making notes on the layout of where the outlets and jacks are, as well as the usual places people stay during the day, like the sofa, the kitchen chair, and so forth. And it's important to have this in writing because it could very well be that the patient or family members might choose to move the telehealth equipment when it's not being used or otherwise make changes. And each person from your agency, like a dietitian or a social worker, for instance, who enters the home should be familiar with the layout done by the person who did the assessment. This is really about making telehealth work. You're going into the home and making sure that ordinary people can use telehealth devices comfortably, routinely, and safely. Think about the safety issues. These are important for making telehealth work. I don't think it'll come to a surprise to many of you that some elderly patients in particular, such as my 80-year-old mother, will live in very cramped living rooms with lots of tables and chairs and ottomans and sewing baskets and whatever else can fit. We could change this, and we could make it much more tidy and maneuverable, and probably if we do, the same items will appear right back where they were on your next visit. I can't emphasize enough the importance of learning people's usual routes. You'll see something like this spelled out on slide 15. You see this cramped room, you're looking to see where does the person go when she gets from that chair. Maybe the telehealth station is where that arrow leads to. We have to know the person's usual routes, how they get to the workstation, what pieces of furniture they're maneuvering around, and other things they negotiate. Learn their roots, and everyone will be safer with telehealth. On that note, before we move on to talking about patients and learning how telehealth can be made to work for them through our patient assessment, I would like to share a story that's been told, I think, 100 times, really, about the value of learning more about our patients who we assign to telehealth. This is one about an elderly woman living with CHF who had been shown how to get into a new routine of stepping on an automated weight scale each morning and sending her weight to her tele-nurse and what pieces of furniture they're maneuvering around and other things they negotiate. Learn their roots, and everyone will be safer with telehealth. On that note, before we move on to talking about patients and learning how telehealth can be made to work for them through our patient assessment, I would like to share a story that's been told, I think, 100 times, really, about the value of learning more about our patients who we assign to telehealth. So that telehealth doesn't just work by turning it on and showing people how to use it. We have to account for their own routines, and they're doing what they think is important. Okay, well, let's move on to getting people assessed as appropriate for telehealth. And you'll see on slide 16 a shortened patient assessment form than the one you were given in your handouts. We're using this form before patients are formally assigned to telehealth. We're looking at patients' capabilities, mainly their ability to see and hear, their ability to tell time, and so forth. We also need to look at the extent of these capabilities, good or poor, somewhere in between. Ideally, of course, we'd like to have everyone's capability for all things be good, but we may have to look beyond what they could do. They may have an in-house caregiver who can assist. Well, in that case, we have to make sure that that person is capable of assisting and will be there regularly to assist. Key to effective telehealth delivery, really, is matching people's, that's patients and, in some cases, in-home caregivers' needs and capabilities with the telehealth technologies so that more communications with you really can take place. We want to ensure this, that they're comfortable using the tools and they're able to use them. Here's a brief checklist of some of the capabilities that you're looking for after you've assessed the patient. Now must assess or acquire equipment for particular patients and caregivers' use. We're looking at concerns such as, can the patient use an audio feature? If not, then we have to look for tools that do not require that he needs to. We're looking at, can the patient operate an on-off switch or see the dial on the device or directions that may be posted on the devices? Well, if not, alternative means of communications has to be looked for. It's very important to note we may be able to locate tools that make up for some of these patients' limitations. This is really changing in the last 10 years. There's really a lot more features and tools than we ever have had. On slide 17, this picture represents a telephone that is really great for people who can't see. It works by voice directives and will automatically dial numbers for them. So if they have dexterity problems like some stroke patients do, this phone doesn't require them to hold a receiver. And what's really changed in the past 10 years is the willingness of vendors and their designers to work with you to customize the tools to your particular patient's needs. I think you're really in a great position to let them know that something is too heavy or too difficult to manage for some of your elderly patients. And I know if there's an engineer in the bunch that's listening with the vendor's consulting group to you, you could be sure he'll want to fix it. That's what they like to do, which is great. You have to let them know what the problem is, though. So again, let's look at some of the same usual tools that we looked at on earlier on slide 18. And here again, we see the workstation, the video phone, and so forth. What's changed about them in recent years is production of less standardized telehealth care products and much more customized options for the home care population. For instance, patients' workstation screens may have a much larger type than they did in the past. And on request from you, they could have, you could, might use other colors that they could see better, depending on what you need. Or the workstation may be in audio versions only, which is great, particularly for those patients with low literacy levels. And some are multilingual. I think we're really past the day when we could say that for some of our patients, telehealth won't work. We really have to let vendors know what we need to make it work. Okay, well, making telehealth work, what should we be expecting of this new way of care delivery? Well, that is different from conventional care services delivery so many times per week. We know this, of course, but potentially we will be making the care be more targeted and timed. I'll be talking about these features in a minute. What we really, we're really looking at in telecare is planning. We're making a telecare plan and hoping to communicate with patients with using it on an as-needed, when-needed, kind-of-need basis. We're not working in anything like our usual scheduling mode, that's for sure. So how do we do this, customized delivery? I think the main thing to keep in mind is that there's no standard telehealthcare plan showing that there should be one televisit substituted for each in-home visit per week or some other formula to follow. Instead, we have to make up our minds that each patient's telecare plan should be individualized, period. And to make such a plan, we simply have to patients a lot better than we already do. Let's look at the design components of the telecare plan on slide 20. So you'll decide, having assessed your patient, gotten to know him or her as well as you can on a first visit, up front you'll decide how many contacts there should be, tele and conventional, during their admission periods. Decide on the frequency and kind of telemonitoring and the duration of contact. So this will give us the initial roadmap that we need just to get started in telehealth care with this patient. The first version of the telecare plan is not set in stone, though. We have opportunities to see what's working over the 60-day admission period, and that's why the last item on slide 20, having data checkpoints, is so important. It's what we wish the outcomes to be at a certain time. Let's say we want to reduce a diabetic's blood glucose levels by a certain percentage in 60 days and find that we're not having success. Well, we have opportunities to change the plan at day 12 or day 21 or 30, introduce new tools at these times, or have different kinds of contacts that may be more effective. That's what I'm talking about on slide 21, making it work, getting in with the right group, especially when we're first starting out in telehealth. Well, making the design changes to the telecare plan is a big part of what we could do to help telehealth work for our patients. But keep in mind that we also have to target patients who really do need the most contact and can benefit from this increased contact, especially when we're first starting out. We need to focus on getting measurable results so that we could be assured that telehealth is working. How can that work? Well, let's take a case of a diabetic who has been frequently hospitalized and is not able to keep his blood glucose level stable. You find out he likes a rich diet and a lot of fast food and doesn't exercise, but he says he wants to change and not be hospitalized and disabled by his disease. Well, that's a good start. We can't change everything, but we can introduce small changes in a customized way. So here's your challenge to work with that and see how this could be. Well, with telehealth, nurses can be more fluid in planning as they track what's working. I like to use this case of someone who wants to change, and we're going to use this in small steps because it's going to help you reach your goals with your CMS demonstration project, one of them being, of course, to avoid the hospitalizations. The fluid planning I'm advocating, and it seems to work, allows you to, for instance, choose the times of day to have contact with your patients, decide on the length of contact that seemed to work well for some patients. It doesn't have to be a fixed 10 minutes on Tuesday. In other words, you can customize this contact even further than just making 5 to 7 minutes on Monday or something. Maybe the particular diabetic patient I'm talking about likes to hear information in the morning and, in addition, seems to retain it only in small amounts. So you know you're going to schedule him for every morning early in small amounts. You can schedule all of your contacts around the ways that work best for all of your patients. And, of course, you're much more able to provide more encouragement to patients and reinforce directives, correct problems, and get people involved in their own care and know what to do than you could have done with just plain conventional care. For the diabetic patient I mentioned a moment ago who didn't eat right but wanted to change, you might also assign an electronic menu planner on loan from the agency or provide menu printouts. I have a picture of one screen on slide 22. These seem to work well for people. They tell the patient specifically about carb and calorie and sodium amounts and the foods he chooses to eat each day, and you're helping him to know what to do and take better care of himself. With this new way of planning and providing care, you'll be more confident throughout the 60-day admission period that outcome expectations and goals will likely be reached. And if you have to tweak the original telecare plan over that period, well, that's okay. You really have to do whatever will work. Okay, let's continue on with these thoughts on making home telehealth work, especially for you starting out today and, of course, wanting to make telehealth efforts last over the long term. It would be helpful, I think, to start looking at where others have achieved success. And thinking about what you can learn from them. Okay, let's move on to the success stories in telehealth. Where is it working? Indicated on slide 24. You've been sent abstracts of published articles on success stories reported in home telehealth. And I'd like to continue, I'd like to comment on these in general and the common threads of that you could glean from these projects, as you'll see from the abstract sent to you. The common denominators are that we're mainly, for the most part, the projects are focusing on chronic disease patient groups, such as patients with CHF. So they're not reporting on telehealth for general use. They really do have a particular focus on chronic disease patients. They're looking at a short-term plan, usually as a result of trying telehealth as part of a three-month-long or six-month-long grant. And to a person, they've used a very small group size, sometimes 3 or 5 or 10 patients only. And these small group sizes may be all that were manageable in busy offices working with a short-term grant. That's how it is. That's how they reported it. And then, of course, there's been a typical focus on chronic diseases that have demonstrable results in the short term. Hands down, that would be CHF patients, and we'll talk about that more in a few minutes. What's missing to date? Well, clearly, what's really missing is long-term results. We don't know what happened after, if agencies have continued to use telehealth, if their patients have learned how to self-manage and all the other good things we're expecting. We don't have any details whatsoever on projects that didn't work, so we have no idea that there even are any projects like that. And there is no acknowledgement that telehealth is still a new and untested frontier. So we're really in the dark about a lot of things. Regardless of what we've learned about successes, I think having all of these missing pieces makes things particularly difficult for people like yourself just starting out in telehealth. And what's more, it's hard to know from these typical articles that the successes don't happen overnight, and that's usually the case. There's usually a very long learning curve among staff that is usually not reported on. For our purposes, too, for planning for the long term, like we'll be doing, you don't know about how others have actually planned for the long term, or if they have not done so after a certain grant ran out, or what reasons there might be for staff choosing not to continue to use the equipment. And again, as I've mentioned throughout the conference, there's really very little acknowledgement from anyone that telehealth is still firmly at frontier status today. So we don't have a good way to measure where we're standing. Where do we stand with our own findings from our agency in telehealth use? And sometime down the road, you might be feeling that even more vividly as you start getting results. We need to move ahead, of course. So take a look at, I mean, we can't just stop and say, gosh, there aren't any guidelines. We don't have them hammered out. We don't know what to do yet, and no one else has done much either. We need to move ahead. And so take a look at my suggestions for making your program successful, indicated on slide 26. I think your best bet may be to replicate the success stories at the start. Across the board, that's been a focus on small groups of CHF patients where results are demonstrable in a short period of time, and you're keeping patients' weight and fluid levels down and keeping people out of hospitals. That's been shown to work. Next, I suggest that you identify new tools and new interventions to expand on the conventional care that you usually provide, and that's and also moving beyond just using usual telehealth, moving beyond using the workstation. You might find that for your diabetic patients that some group work with cooking classes that you could actually learn about online is helpful for you and for them, and you could do printouts to share with them. You can use customized and electronic ethnic menu planners that may get people involved in their self-care. There's many that are just for African-American populations, Hispanic populations, and all kinds of groups and their cooking and cultural ways. All of these tools are inexpensive and readily available. And, of course, all of us have to address new conditions that will affect our planning and home care, such as nursing shortages, clearly. But there's other issues, too. We'll likely not have a surplus of multilingual nurses either to address the needs of our new and growing populations in home care, such as multicultural populations. We have to find tools that will address language and cultural differences. Clearly, there's a lot to do, and I think telehealth can help with all of these. And, of course, I'd be happy to send any of you who would like some resources that I've put together that address concerns of dealing with our multilingual and multicultural patient population. Okay, well, moving on to our final slide, number 27, I'd just like to leave you with some thoughts on making telehealth work, and particularly for your long-term use. To make it work, it's not just about buying a telehealth machine or installing one, and it's not about continually shopping for other or more machines. We have an ongoing task, really, to match tools with patients' needs and their changing needs, even within their 60-day home care admission period, and checking to see that the needs are being met, their status is maintained, and even better, improved. And to make it work, we must tweak and customize the telecare plan. Nurses staying in close communication with their patients to meet their patients' sometimes very challenging and potentially costly needs should have the positive results you'll need for the demonstration project you're involved with today. You're communicating more to identify and address patients' needs in a more timely way than you ever could before. And it's all for the purpose of keeping your patients' health outcomes in good shape, and, of course, keeping patients at home and out of the hospital. And that's what making telehealth work is all about. Well, I understand that we could have a question and answer period now, if any of you are ready for that.
Sherry, will you open the lines for questions and answers?
Absolutely. The question and answer session will be conducted electronically today. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key, followed by the digit 1 on your touch-tone telephone. Just remember, if you are using a speakerphone, to please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, and we'll pause for a moment to assemble our queue.
Audrey, while we're waiting for the first question,
Could you share some strategies for two specific components that we hear sometimes are problematic for agencies? Getting physician buy-in to allow the patient to go on the telehealth equipment, and also the concept with the staff involvement in being able to market the telehealth equipment to the patients, to get the patient buy-in and the staff.
Well, I can't give conclusive answers, but I have found physicians are very hesitant to use the new technologies if they haven't seen it demonstrated and they haven't been shown how nurses can provide more targeted care to their home care patients. But so giving demonstrations to them is fabulous, but one of the things is I know there's a lot of reservations by physicians mainly because they feel they're going to be overwhelmed with all the data that's getting collected from the telemonitoring equipment. And that does not have to be the case. You could have alerts to show when is a critical moment. You know, the blood pressure is racing, someone's had a reaction to medicines and so forth. That is when the physician can be alerted. But it's not; they're not on call. I think that's one of the things they're concerned with, or getting overloaded. About marketing, nurses doing the marketing, it's a big task to get the information out correctly, what you really can do. I know some people have advertised, like, we're always there for you. And it's given an impression, like, whenever you need us, we're in our car to come see you. And that's not it. I mean, people can make contact, and they can be observed off-site, but it's not the idea that we're always going to be holding your hand. And I don't think a lot of people really understand what home care is. They don't know that it's 60 days, and these are what the visits involve and so forth, and you don't know it until you get into home care. So I think it's more of an education thing rather than just a marketing. You know, and this is what we can do for you, you know, make it clear that, and this is another helpful tool through telehealth, so we could do even more for you.
That's great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Again, if you would like to ask a question, it's star one on your telephone. And it appears there are no questions at this time. Christina, go ahead and turn the conference over to you. Oh, you know what? We did just have someone signal. We have Verdelli Felix. From Isabella Home Care.
Hi, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
I'm from Isabella Home Care in New York City. We're a chronic home care agency, and it was interesting to hear you talk about 60 days as a checkpoint, as you maybe like to use this new term. I wondered how people who are primarily PPS Medicare, people deal with the fact that they're being discharged on short-term acute care when they actually have a chronic CHF condition for the rest of their lives, and how these studies, how we can compare those people who can keep a machine in for 2-3 years or for the rest of their life versus someone who is under Medicare reimbursement, and have, you know, and they got to a certain point, they're stable, and they take it out. Is there anybody doing any long-term studies regarding recidivism for CHF, for instance, on a Medicare telehealth project that ends after 60 days?
Well, I think there should be, because I found when I first started realizing that so many of the strides were being made with CHF and certain chronic diseases, why it would stop after 60 days, that's the Medicare benefit, but for home care. But people are living for the rest of their lives with the disease. So, you know, it didn't seem quite right to me, and I know that the CMS is conducting demonstration projects now for chronic disease populations and possibly extending, you know, the home care. Well, I'm not exactly sure how it's going to work, but really based on their findings in these demonstration projects, I think there will be a reconsideration on home care for longer-term care.
Thank you. Because I really don't think we're really going to be able to analyze a lot of this data if it's so short-term acute. And
yeah.
And we're very lucky because we are a chronic home care program. And
yeah. Oh, I agree with you. Well, I think one of the things they were really trying to show is that you could show people how to take better care of themselves so they won't just get out of home care and get re-hospitalized. They'll know, you know, how to treat themselves as far as what to eat and, you know, the salts to avoid and all that kind of stuff, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, it's not, people are fixed after the 60 days.
Especially when they're 80 years old.
Yeah. Oh, no, I agree with you. And I'm not saying this is the solution for everything, you know, but it is a way of helping people start to self-manage and know how to take care of themselves, you know. That's it's just a start.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for asking the question.
Again, star one, if you would like to ask a question. We'll take our next question from Sheila Gallant with Emerson Hospital Home.
Hi, good afternoon. I just have a question in regards to the handouts we received on the telehealth policies and the forms and checklist. I only got the table of contents in the policy number one. Were we supposed to be able to print out all of that information?
I thought so. I could send the information.
I just didn't know again. If anybody else had any trouble getting that or if it was just me. But that's all I did get from
okay.
the email.
Well, we'll correct that.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
We should have 10 pages.
We had, Audrey, we had 10 pages that should have been printed out. Or should we have had more, Audrey?
I'll check it. I thought there was the whole...
I got pages, the cover page, which was like the table of contents, and then page 116 through 118 only.
Oh, yeah, that's the
first policy.
Mm-hmm.
And then
well,
success stories.
Yeah, and that's separate.
Well, we'll correct that.
Yeah, that's what we got.
Okay.
And our next question comes from Linda Rajpaw with St. Francis Hospital.
Same with us. That was the same question. Thank you. We were missing the rest of the policies.
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We'll move to Athena Liu with Jewish Home and Hospital.
Hi, yes. This is Norma Otero. And I'm interested in finding out what was the process for the buy-in for the nurses. Was that something you had to work on?
I'll answer that as soon as your phone. The buy-in. I think a lot of people just that I interviewed were just had a lot of reservations about getting displaced or just automating what they thought should be in-person exchange. It's really important to get an enthusiastic nurse, and usually the machines just don't appear and the vendors don't just have to sell their products. You really need an in-house person that's like a champion and has to say, you know, we could bring so many other or more services to people who really need to be followed throughout the day. And I know you can, even in conventional care, you never went throughout the day to anyone. But now, you know, where you're trying to keep the outcomes up, you're trying to keep people out of hospital, if you could fix things that show up on Monday and you're not going to talk to them again until Thursday, you know, that's the main thing. So I think mainly it's the acceptance of new technology. It's, you know, ever since the telephone, you know, people have found that, you know, it's not embraced by everyone right away. So I think 6 to 9 months sounded like about the average for getting the buy-in, or at least acceptance.
By the nurses?
Mm-hmm, by the nurses.
What did you find to be the best things that you used to help the nurses buy into it?
I think having the champion on site from, I'm not a nurse, and to hear it from other nurses, like how it has streamlined their work, their patients were so much happier, they were taking better care of themselves, especially right when PPS was coming in, that was a really big issue, you know, to make sure, you know, if we're not going to be there and we're not getting paid and the outcomes still have to be up, you know, how are we going to manage? It really was a very new scenario. And that's when people started thinking, we've got to do things differently. And having a nurse on site trying it, seeing that it worked, and then showing and telling people, the other nurses, you know, how well it worked for them, I think that's the ticket to having the in-house nurse champion.
I agree. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
Again, star one if you would like to ask a question.
I was wondering if people had reservations about the effects on patients, if they're concerned about using it with your patients for some reasons.
And we'll take our next question from Michelle Marks. Michelle, your line is open. Again, Michelle, your line is open. If you're on a speakerphone, please depress your mute function.
Yes, I didn't press anything for question. That must have been an error.
Oh, okay.
I'm sorry.
There are no questions. Oh, I'm sorry. We'll go to a follow-up from Verdelli Felix with Isabella Home Care again. And your line is open. Ms. Felix?
I'm sorry, I had on mute.
Okay, please go ahead. Your line is open now.
In terms of being in the patient's home, do you make the patient sign anything in terms of their liability if someone steals the equipment or the equipment is abused, like coke gets all over it or it's dropped, or basically the agency just takes the risk and hopes that the equipment stays there until they pick it up again?
No, that should all be part of your informed consent. That patients agree to receive some of their services, not all of their home care services, but some of them by telehealth, and they also agree that should be on the form that has to be signed. You have to have a signed informed consent form before you start, and it should be that they agree to the upkeep, and you know that they are liable. There are a lot of people that really want to keep the equipment, but you know you have to make it understood that. They could buy their own equipment, but the voice at the other end is from your office, and so having a workstation, you know, really won't be effective. There's not, you know, sort of a self. I'm sure there will be companies that will do that, you know, that will say that we have nurse. Well, there are, but it's not quite the same as home care. You know, it's more like an answering service, you know, that follows a certain protocol. But, yeah, I mean, if it was in your agency, you do have to have a signed informed consent, and that should include their liability and assent to making sure that it's returned in reasonably usable condition.
All right. We're doing some off-the-cuff, off-the-shelf type of teller equipment.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to have, you know, so the onus is totally on us. We're not subcontracting, really, for the equipment.
Well, that would be part of your form, even if it was not a regular company, but that's the equipment you own,
right,
and you're loaning it, so that would be part of your form.
We just don't want to steer them away either. Right. Thank you.
Right.
Are there no other questions in the queue at this time?
Well, Audrey, I'd really like to thank you for providing this presentation. I think you've given all of the agencies a lot to think about, as well as an awful lot of good information. I want to remind all the agencies on the call that we did provide an evaluation form, and we do welcome your feedback regarding the presentation. I also want to remind the agencies that there are two telehealth tools on MedQuick. That's at www.medquick.org, and they are the home. If you look under home care and then under telehealth, you'll find some tools there, the home telehealth reference guide and the telehealth disease management series that have been developed specifically for your telehealth patients, and also setting up the telehealth equipment and program within your agency. So I want to thank you for listening, and have a nice afternoon.
This does conclude today's conference. We thank you for your participation, and you may disconnect at this time.